It's 2 o'clock, and this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated August 7th, 2015. We'll begin today's readings on the front page with Good Times. Kuhl and the gang will close this year's celebration. While not drawing its name from the song, Decatur Celebration and Kuhl and the Gang song Celebration have long been associated. Top Cap Decatur Celebration's 30th anniversary this weekend, the band and event will meet. Kuhl and the Gang will be performing on the show stage at 8 p.m. Sunday, August 9th. According to Celebration producer Lori Sturgill, it's not our official theme song. They use it on floats or in booths, and it's very fitting. Even though the song was popular over 35 years ago, it never went away, and neither has the band. Kuhl and the Gang formed in 1965 in Jersey City, New Jersey, when Robert Kuhl Bell was 15 years old. The band, which consisted of Bell, his brother, and five friends, was originally called Jazzy Acts. Miles Davis and John Coltrane were popular jazz acts at the time, Bell said. The band backed up artists recording at the Soultown Review, Jersey City's answer to Motown. A promoter suggested the band create their own name and sound. Eventually, they decided on Kuhl and the Gang. The music being created was jazz and funk, Bell said. It had a street sound or vibe. The group recorded their first self-titled album in 1969. For the next 10 years, they found their way to the top 40 charts with R&B, funk, and jazz songs such as Jungle Boogie and Open Sesame. We were writing songs that were instrumentals, Bell said. We rolled through the 70s with that sound. But the music began to change. The band knew they would have to as well. A promoter suggested the band hire a lead singer. J.T. Taylor fit like a glove, Bell said. The 70s were good to us, but that took us to another level. The band accepted the change from their progressive sound and felt pretty good about. It was evolution of Kuhl and the Gang, Bell said. We were now pop. The band would reach the height of their career with top 10 songs such as Ladies' Night, Get Down On It, Cherish, and of course Celebration, which reached number one. These songs and others still have the popularity they did over 30 years ago. They're one of the most sampled R&B bands, Sturgill said. You hear elements of their songs everywhere. In order to perform the variety of styles, the band now consists of 11 to 14 musicians, with five musicians making up the horn section. Taylor left the band 15 years ago, but the remainder of the group has changed very little. Some of the new guys have been around 30 years, Bell said. Kuhl and the Gang has been touring throughout the years, including recent shows with Van Halen, Kid Rock, Bryan Adams, Dave Matthews Band, Gladys Knight, and Chaka Khan. We mix it up a lot, Bell said. Sturgill was able to invite the band after ADM donated $150,000 to the festival. We've never been able to afford them, she said. She scheduled the 90-minute show to commemorate the end of the celebration's 30th anniversary. They're closing out the celebration, she said. It's a perfect fit. If you go, it's Kuhl and the Gang at 8 p.m. Sunday, August 9th, at the show stage, or check DecaturCelebration.com. Bridge the Gap effort solves math, work skills. Mackenzie Mason knew from an early age that she wanted to be an engineer. I've always been fascinated by how things work and how they're put together, said Mason, who will begin college at Richland Community College this month. Thanks to Bridge the Gap, a cooperative effort among Workforce Investment Solutions, Richland, and the Education Coalition of Macon County, students who need a little extra help to tackle college-level math got a 4-week tutoring session in June, followed by a summer internship that allows them to use math skills and explore career options at the same time. Mason is interning at Caterpillar Incorporated. She's driven a 50-ton truck, an experience she calls laughingly terrifying, and will get to visit the shop floor to watch as machines are put together. It's important for an engineer to see things from the operator's point of view, said Ashish Shah, the mechanical engineer working with her this week. She said he's showing her the design process, of which the visit to the shop floor is an important component, because the people who build the machines can point out things the engineers need to know. Richland received a grant, thanks to the efforts of Leanne Brooks, director of the Academic Success Center, to offer the 4-week math enrichment program. Workforce and EDCO partnered with Richland to offer the internships, for which the students are receiving pay. We wanted to expose them to the industry that they think they want to move into once they finish with college, said Robin McCoy, director of Workforce. We took it one step further and offered work experience in that area. The hope is that they will make contacts and learn good work habits as well as gain deeper knowledge of their chosen field, McCoy said. Once they begin college at Richland, Workforce and EDCO will continue to follow up with them and offer support. Megan Bresnan hopes to join Disney's college program where she can work for the company and go to school. She was behind in math skills before the 4-week program, but progressed far enough, she said, that she'll only have to take a semester of remedial math instead of a year. She's working at the Children's Museum of Illinois, helping with events and working the front desk. Good practice for her plans for a career in the hospitality industry. This is a novel approach, and we're very excited, said Danny Kraft of EDCO. One thing that's so powerful is 3 organizations collaborated to solve a problem and create a solution. Felon flees police, K-9 locates handgun. Decatur Police Department street crimes detectives, who were dispatched to the city's east side on reports of about 15 people congregating while possessing guns and selling narcotics, arrested a 22-year-old parolee who ran when they arrived. After 2 reports were called into the police about 3 p.m. Tuesday regarding a group in the vicinity of Walnut Street, near Lober and Charles Streets, 3 police detectives went to the area. When they arrived, they saw about 15 people sitting and standing near the rear of a house near Walnut and Lober. Detectives did not initiate contact with anyone as they drove southbound on Lober past the group, said an affidavit by Decatur Police Detective John Hess. As they noticed the group was aware of the presence of the officers, the unmarked vehicle turned into the alley just south of the group. Upon turning into the alley, LaShawn Crew immediately got up from his seat and began running northbound, Hess wrote in a statement. Crew was bent at the waist and was using both of his hands to hold something in front of his gym shorts. Crew ran east on Walnut, then south alongside a house. Detectives drove through a yard and intercepted him in the alley. Upon taking Crew into custody, Crew stated he did not have anything on him and stated that he had an active warrant, Hess wrote in his statement. Macon County Sheriff's Detective T.W. Hoke, a canine officer, walked along Crew's path and located a 9mm loaded handgun with one round in the chamber, believed to be the object Crew had been trying to conceal as he was running. Crew said he did not want to speak with police, but acknowledged while in custody, "I saw you and I ran." Crew has 3 felony convictions and was most recently released from prison May 1st, after serving 20 months of a 3-year prison sentence for aggravated battery in a public place in a 2013 case. He is due in court for his arraignment by Wednesday. Eisenhower Class of 85 honors Ida Brooks with bench. Ida Brooks left a legacy behind in the hearts of the students and student-athletes who she coached. She always made time for children and, in fact, was on a field trip with a group from Old King's Orchard Community Center when she suffered the heart attack that ultimately led to her death in February. "Everybody loved her," said Linda Kingston Pipkins, a member of Eisenhower High School Class of 1985. "She put us all in our place. I think everything she did, she turned away and winked about. She was awesome." That's the prevailing opinion and the reason the class of 1985, which will celebrate its 30th reunion this weekend, decided to raise money for a memorial bench in Brooks' honor to be placed at Eisenhower. "First, my idea was trees," Jennifer Perkins Duro said. But the Keel Building district administrator said they had too many and no space for it. Then Linda suggested the bench and gave us prices, and I called back Eisenhower to make sure we could do that. The class has its own Facebook page where class members can stay in touch with each other, but a face-to-face reunion is a regular occurrence, too. Coincidentally, Decatur Celebration is having its 30th anniversary, so the class members who can make it will march in the Razzle Dazzle Good Times Parade on Saturday morning behind the Eisenhower Band. They even had special shirts made. Brooks began her teaching career in 1966 at Centennial Junior High and also taught at Johns Hill before moving to Eisenhower, where she taught physical education and coached girls' basketball and boys' soccer. After her retirement in 2001, she was a caseworker with the Right Track Truancy Reduction Program and a program coordinator for Promise Community Center. Her brand of tough love was mixed with the genuine concern and affection that touched students and made them pay attention. "She was just a good lady," class member Cheryl Turnbrough said. "She had a heart and felt kids needed that push, and it was just enough." ICC joins battle against power auction price hike. The regulators of the Illinois electricity system have now joined the battle to save central and southern Illinois power consumers from a massive price increase. The Illinois Commerce Commission has filed detailed comments with the Federal Agency Regulatory Commission calling for a rapid review of a regional power auction that spiked power prices by almost 900%. And the ICC said that if the federal regulators find the results were unfair, it should order consumer refunds. The April auction result effectively cost consumers another $11 a month on their monthly power bills, although the organization overseeing the auction, the Mid-Continent Independent System Operator, or MISO, later ordered a credit of $84 million. That will shave about $2 off the inflated bills, but the rest of the increase still stands. Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan and others have filed complaints with Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, calling for the auction results to be set aside. Madigan claims one particular power supplier, Dynegy, had too much influence in the auction and drove prices upward with its bidding strategy. Dynegy denies the allegations. The ICC, in its comments, said it is time to rethink the auction process and suggested expanding the territory included in it. Right now, the auction covers the area served by Ameren Illinois, the Ameren Illinois utility, and the ICC urged this to be widened to cover the Ameren Missouri utility territory as well, opening up more power sources for the bidding. The ICC said combining the Illinois and Missouri zones would dilute the ability of a pivotal supplier to exercise its market power. Experts from the ICC also said it's time to rework the rules of the auction, which are designed to ensure that there's always adequate power available over the next year to meet peak demand, such as high summer. But the ICC said current rules limiting power supplies that can be brought in from outside the Illinois auction area, known as Zone 4, are too restrictive and drive up bids. Power prices in the April auction, expressed in megawatt days, jumped from a previous level of $16.75 a megawatt day to $150 a megawatt day. Other prices in other regional power auctions held outside of Zone 4 at the same time never got above $3.50 a megawatt day. It's reasonable to assume that allowing lower-priced imports of power to be cleared before higher-priced capacity within Zone 4 would have resulted in a clearing price for Zone 4 significantly less than $150, the ICC noted in its filing. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission oversees the nation's power system, and Mid-Continent Independent System Operator is a non-profit group that looks after the distribution of power across a 15-state area that includes Illinois. MISO, in a 186-page rebuttal filed with federal regulators, insisted the latest auction was fair and there was no shady manipulation of the results. MISO wants the complaint against it dismissed, but said it is willing to look at reformulating auction procedures and is engaged in a broad range of stakeholder discussions on that issue. Two-car collision kills one, seriously injures two near Macon. A two-vehicle head-on collision has killed one person and left two others with life-threatening injuries, according to the Macon County Sheriff's Office. The accident happened Thursday evening on Andrew Street Road between Corthwaite Road and Jacobs Road, just east of Macon. The two injury victims were taken by ambulance to Decatur hospitals for treatment. The road was closed so emergency personnel could attend to the victims and deputies could investigate the crash. This story will be updated. In state news, state fair officials say budget will have little impact. Springfield. Agriculture officials say the state's budget mess will have little effect on the Illinois State Fair this year. With the annual 10-day event set to kick off next week, Illinois Department of Agriculture Director Philip Nelson said the lack of state budget will mean some vendors will face payment delays. But fairgoers at the Springfield event and the state fair in DuQuoin later this month won't notice, he said. We're excited about the fair, Nelson said during a preview of the fair for members of the media. The lack of a state budget has forced dozens of nonprofit social service agencies to lay off workers, shut down offices, and stop services to the poor, elderly, children, and mentally ill. Governor Bruce Rauner has announced plans to lay off more than 170 workers and shut down the state museum system, a prison work camp in Hardin County, and the World Shooting Recreational Complex in Sparta. But Nelson said vendors at the fair have agreed to provide services such as ice, garbage pickup, and livestock waste removal, despite the chance that they have to wait to be paid. They understand we don't have a budget. Payments will be delayed, Nelson said. That's part of doing business. I think everybody has a very good positive attitude about it. We're working through it, Nelson said. State Fair Manager Patrick Buchan acknowledged the budget impasse at the Capitol has made it not the easiest 3 months. But he said, We think we have a wonderful state fair for you. Wayne Rosenthal, director of the Illinois Department of Natural Resources, said the agency has added events to Conservation World, which is located on the north side of the fairgrounds. Among the additions are the return of a 3 times per day lumberjack exhibition and weekend canoe rides on a pond on the grounds. The fair in Springfield begins with the parade Thursday, August 13th, and runs through Sunday, August 23rd. The DuQuoin State Fair opens Friday, August 28th, and runs through Monday, September 7th. Lawmakers, more time needed to review coal pollution rules. Springfield. A bipartisan coalition of downstate lawmakers wants the federal government to extend a public comment period on new environmental rules targeting coal mining. State Representative John Bradley, Democrat of Marion, and State Senator Gary Forby, Democrat of Benton, have introduced non-binding resolutions asking the Interior Department to give states more time to respond to regulations that would limit mining operations near streams and reduce waste disposal. We need ample time to respond appropriately, Bradley told reporters during a news conference at the Capitol. The public comment period on the rules runs for 60 days. The resolution, backed by Democrats and Republicans, calls for that to be extended by 180 days. We have to slow down, Forbes said. The proposal, which was crafted over 6 years, would require companies to avoid mining practices that hurt streams, pollute drinking water sources, increase flood risk, or threaten forests. State Senator Andy Menar, Democrat of Bunker Hill, said that after spending 6 years putting the plan together, the federal government should allow more time for a response. He said the rules could have a significant impact on employment within his district. "Give us more time," Menar said. The resolution says the state's nearly 5,000 miners earn an average salary of about $85,000 annually. But with increased regulations and mechanization, the number of mining jobs has been cut in more than half over the last 2 decades. Among those co-sponsoring the legislation are State Representatives Terry Bryant, Republican of Murfreesboro, Avery Bourne, Republican Pawnee, Tim Butler, Republican Springfield, Brandon Phelps, Democrat of Harrisburg, Pat Vershore, Democrat of Milan, Adam Brown, Republican of Champaign, John Cavalletto, Republican of Salem, David Reese, Republican of Willow Hill, and Reggie Phillips, Republican of Charleston. The legislation is House Resolution 687. In the Senate, Forbes and State Senator Sam McCann, Republican of Plainville, are sponsoring Senate Resolution 852. Decatur man indicted on federal murder charges, Springfield. Kelton Snyder, a 23-year-old parolee, previously charged in state court with armed robbery in connection with a case in which 19-year-old Paige Mars was shot to death, was indicted by a federal grand jury Thursday for murder and 4 other criminal counts. Snyder, who had been held in the Macon County Jail without bond since his arrest April 6th, is facing mandatory life in prison if convicted on the federal murder charge while using a firearm, or the death penalty. For the death penalty to be sought, there must be a directive from the U.S. Attorney General, said a news release from the Central Illinois District of the U.S. Attorney's Office. The state of Illinois no longer has the death penalty, but the federal government has the potential option in a case like this, said Macon County State's Attorney Jay Scott, who worked with federal authorities on this case. Snyder and Matthew Higgins Vogt, 22, were arrested a few days after they allegedly robbed the Circle K at 685 South Baltimore Avenue at about 2:30 a.m. Friday, April 3rd. The robbery was captured on the store's surveillance video. The body of Mars, who had driven Snyder and Higgins Vogt to the robbery scene, was discovered 3 days later in a wooded area near the Sangamon River, just south of the 1100 block of Lincoln Park Drive. During police interviews, Higgins Vogt, also a parolee, confessed to police that he fatally shot the Long Creek woman late Sunday, April 5th. Higgins Vogt described to the detectives in great detail how he told her he was afraid she would tell on him and Snyder and that he shot Mars multiple times, said an affidavit by Decatur Police Detective Joe Patton. Higgins Vogt is facing 45 years to life in prison if convicted of first-degree murder for personally discharging a firearm. He's also facing 21 to 45 years in prison if convicted of armed robbery. Those charges were filed in Macon County Circuit Court. Higgins Vogt is due in court Wednesday for pretrial hearings on his cases. Snyder was also arraigned in the circuit court on charges of armed robbery. However, the decision was made by local and federal authorities to transfer his case to federal court. As a general rule, transfer decisions are made when prosecutors believe they have a better chance of obtaining convictions or longer sentences in the federal system. In addition to the murder charge, Snyder is charged with conspiring to commit the armed robbery and commission of the robbery and interference with commerce, known as the Hobbs Act. brandishing a firearm during and in relation to a crime of violence, and possession of a firearm by a felon, said the U.S. Attorney's news release. The Hobbs Act is a federal law prohibiting the obstruction of commerce by robbery or extortion. On or about April 5th, the indictment alleges conspirators met to discuss the possibilities that Mars may alert law enforcement about the robbery. And on April 5th, conspirators killed Mars, the release said. Snyder will be arraigned on the federal in the federal courthouse in Urbana at a date yet to be determined. Snyder is being held in jail without bond in custody of the U.S. Marshal's Office. A date for his arraignment in federal court in Urbana is pending. The federal sentencing guidelines for Snyder's additional charges are a maximum of 20 years for the Hobbs Act robbery, 10 years to life for brandishing a firearm in relation to violent crime, and up to 10 years for firearm possession by a felon. Missouri and Illinois Jeep owners sue after highway hacking. East St. Louis. Car owners in Belleville and eastern Missouri have filed a federal class action lawsuit against Fiat Chrysler and a dashboard computer manufacturer after two hackers used a laptop computer to take control of a Jeep being driven on a St. Louis highway. A lawsuit filed Tuesday in U.S. District Court in East St. Louis names the company that makes Jeeps, as well as Harman International Industries, manufacturer of the U-Connect dashboard computers, in millions of Chrysler vehicles. The lawsuit comes after the hackers used the Internet to gain remote control of a Jeep as it traveled on Interstate 64. The Jeep's driver was a Wired magazine reporter who knew the hacker's intent in advance. Fiat Chrysler has since recalled 1.4 million Jeeps. On Biz, Coney McCain's American Eatery, Teacher's Lounge, and Lexington Inn and Suites. Leah Stukens wants to maintain the feel that has been developed inside Coney McCain's American Eatery at 104 East Prairie Avenue in downtown Decatur. At the same time, she says it needs to be able to accommodate more customers, so it has expanded next door into the former Jimmy John's space at the corner of North Main Street and East Prairie. Jimmy John's moved around the corner into a space on Merchant Street. "I like the coziness of Coney," said Stukens, the owner of the family-run business. "People are coming in larger groups. It has a greater visibility now. It has been a long time in coming." Coney's has more than doubled its staff and now has seating for more than 100 in three rooms and an outdoor sidewalk space. It originally seated 42 diners, she said. The cozy feel remains with cherry wood and exposed brick in an upstairs area, Stukens said. "The view is fantastic," she said. "People love sitting up there. It's a fun atmosphere." A new menu is in process of being unveiled, with new sandwiches and salads in addition to old favorites, Stukens said. "Business has been up as changes have been made to downtown," she said. "It's an indication people are looking for independent restaurants," Stukens said. It's worth coming down here for." Coney's is open for breakfast, lunch, and dinner with an expanded bar. Hours are 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, and 6:30 a.m. to 9 p.m. Friday and Saturday. Call 217-475-1111. That's 475-1111. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated August 7th, 2015. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.